Now through June 21st, new customers can get 75 megabits per second internet on the next generation Xfinity 10G network for just $19.99 a month for 12 months with a 1-year contract. Go to Xfinity.com/10G, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today. Requires paperless billing and auto pay with stored bank account. Restrictions apply. Equipment, taxes, and fees extra. After promo, regular rates apply to internet service. Actual speeds vary and not guaranteed.
KOHI News presented by your Columbia Humane Shelter. Thanks to generous support from Xfinity. Learn more about the X1 from Xfinity today at the Beaverton Tennis Born Xfinity store. And check out Columbia Humane Shelter, ours and animals at ColumbiaHumane.com.
Your local news, traffic, sports, and weather station, AM 1600 KOHI, St. Helens.
You don't own me. Don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to say.
It's time now for Odd Friday with Brady and Tammy here on KOHI. Odd Friday is presented by Prehive Computers. Contact Prehive today at Prehive.com. The opinions expressed on this program, not necessarily those of KOHI, staff, management, or advertisers. Now, here's Brady and Tammy.
Good morning. Thank you all for joining us. And this is our last week of special election coverage. And this morning, we are doing the candidates for Columbia County Fire and Rescue Directors.
We'll be doing a 2-hour show with Melinda and Carol with setting the record straight as well.
So. Yeah. Good morning to both of you guys.
Hi, everybody.
Good morning.
So we did invite all the candidates, and joining us for position one is Mark, and I'll let you say your last name so I don't screw it up, Mark.
Kreitzer.
Kreitzer. Okay. Not so hard. But I didn't want to screw it up. And Austin Zimbrick, is that correct?
Zimbrick?
Is he here?
Not on.
Oh, we won't see him. Okay, well, he says he's joining. Hopefully, he will join us shortly. For position two, we have Ryan Welby. Good morning.
Good morning.
There you are. You're okay. And Hans, and I don't know how he says his last name. Does anyone know?
Feig.
Is it Feig?
I don't know. He's not here, so it don't matter.
He didn't come. He did say that he has a work conflict and is unable to join. And for position three, we have Richard Fletcher, who is here. Thank you very much. And we did not hear from Jeff Flatt. He did not respond. But Kimberly McLean did respond and said that she had a work conflict. And we had given her a month notice about the show, but she said she was not able to reschedule or get around that, so she was not able to join us.
And also, we have a new phone number, temporary, until Monday.
Yes.
And it is
To
call in with questions, it's 503-933-5014.
So if you have a question, you can dial that temporary number and listen.
Marty will take your question and text it to us, and then we'll get to it. So, moving right along. Do you want to start, Brady?
Well, first we want to give everybody 2 minutes to sort of introduce yourself and tell us why you're running. And we will start with, well, Austin is not here. So we will start with you, Mark.
Thank you. You know, I think my experience speaks for itself. You know, I've been on the board for 20 years. I retired from Fulton Valley Fire and Rescue after a 30-year career. I was on the 6 years for the Governor's Fire Policy Council, 6 years on the Oregon Board of Public Safety Standards and Training, 10-year board member for Oregon Fire District Directors Association. I served 4 years as president of the National Association of Elected Fire Officials. Currently, I'm volunteering with the Toy and Joy Auction and with Habitat for Humanity as a board member and a volunteer to build affordable housing in Columbia County. I think the experience and dedication I have in this county is my biggest asset. Thank you.
Thank you. Ryan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name's Ryan Welby. I grew up in Columbia County, and I'm I own a construction company, excavation. So we've been in business for 7 years now and grown up from nothing into what it is, and I'm very proud of that. I have two wonderful kids. My daughter goes to the high school, my son goes to the middle school, and I have a couple cows, a dog, and some chickens.
Thank you. And finally, Richard.
Hello. excuse me. I'm a lifelong member of the fire or the county and the fire district. Lived in the fire district all my life. I'm 55. Been involved with the fire district since a little kid. My parents were both volunteer firefighters and EMTs back when the rural fire districts were first formed in 74. And I grew up with the fire service, being dragged to the fire stations for things all my life. And we helped with Toy and Joy's kids up to teenagers. And I joined as a volunteer myself in 90. I went to work for Columbia River Fire in 94. And I worked from 94 to 2019 as a mechanic. I was also a volunteer for Columbia River Fire during that whole time up until 2021 or 2022. As a volunteer for them, I still live in the fire district. I live in Goble, not far from the Goble station. And, I bring lots of fire experience. Plus I know a lot of what goes on background in the fire district. I was there for 25 years. So that's why I'm running. I want to see some accountability.
All right. Thank you. And I guess we'll start with Tammy, who has your first question.
All right. Let me see. How would each of you deal, if elected to the board, with a fire chief that has a 100% vote of no confidence? And I guess we'll just go ahead and start with Mark.
Okay. You know, the vote of no confidence is not that uncommon from the union. They don't like the fire chief. They'll do the vote of no confidence. The fire chief was hired to have a different set of eyes looking stuff. And that's what he's done. And he also holds his, all employees accountable to do their job. And I think that's the big difference, is he holds them accountable. I think we should let the fire chief do his job and then find out what he says needs to have changed. And I think the board's open to that. Thank you.
Okay. Ryan?
First off, I think it would make sense to me to consult legal on the issue as a board member, and then I think that he should be put on paid administrative leave and figure out what's going on with his vote of no confidence and his lawsuit and everything else. I think the firefighters have brought up some serious concerns in the March meeting, and those were pretty alarming to me. The fact that the no vote confidence vote was unanimous, that doesn't sound good. I think that it's just prudent, you know. I mean, I run a business and no, if everybody didn't like the way I ran it, then nobody would work for me and I would be unemployed. So there's something going on. Not everybody can be wrong. So I think that they need to do their due diligence and get to the bottom of it.
Okay, thank you. Rick?
I kind of speak with Ryan also. That's a huge blow to the fire district to have the union say that they don't trust their leader. And I've read their vote of no confidence, and I have a lot of concern of some of the items brought up in there along with the lawsuit. And I agree that we need to do this correctly. If we come in as new board members, we have to work within a current budget. We have to keep everybody paid. We have to try to honor the contract that the union signed and the district signed pay-wise. But we also need to talk to legal. We need to make sure we do things right, cross the T's, dot the I's. And we need to investigate these allegations and then do what we need to do for disciplinary measures based on those. So I'm kind of the same way. If it comes down to we should put chief on leave, I'm all for that, and we investigate. But like I say, we got to do it legally, and we got to do it within our budget.
Okay, thank you. Brady?
I'm not next.
Okay, Melinda?
It's Melinda.
Oh, okay, sure. If each of you would please tell me, describe to me in your opinion what the culture is at the fire department, and is it healthy? And if so, please explain why you think that. And if you feel like it needs changing, please explain explicitly how you think it needs to be changed and how, as a board member, you would direct the chief to do those things, to make those changes. And, Rick, I'm going to start with you.
Okay. If you're talking about how it is now versus how it was, when I was there, it was the fire district, is fire service in general, is a big family. I mean, these guys live 48 hours, 2 days at a time with each other. They spend almost as much time with the crews as they do their home, their families. So it's a big family, group, and they share back and forth what's going on. And right now the atmosphere there is really poor. They're looking for places to go, other places, so they can feel confident in their job coming to work every day. Because they're not going to get reprimanded. They're not going to get something happen. But they're even going to get a paycheck that they're deserved. So, I mean, right now, I guess you want to say the atmosphere is really poor. Used to be really good. Guys were great. I worked with a lot of the guys that are still there that haven't left yet. And they're great guys. And these are guys that are boots on the ground that get stuff done. These are the guys that are direct patient contact, customer contact. They're the ones out helping people in their worst time and day, you know, and we need to treat them that way. We need to do what we need to do to make them happy and make them enjoy their job so they can come to work and want to go to work. I always wanted to go to work. I loved my job there. It was something I never thought of work as work. It was a joy to be there.
Okay. Thank you. Mark?
Could you repeat the question again, please?
Yes. How would you describe the culture at Columbia River Fire and Rescue? Do you think it's a healthy culture? Do you think it's fine? Do you think it needs improvement? And if it needs improvement, what would you as a board member direct the current chief to? What steps would you direct the current chief to take to improve the culture?
Well, you know, you're going to have employees that are very motivated to do their jobs, and you're going to have other ones that are not so motivated to do their jobs. The average cost for our employees and benefits is almost $200,000 a year. So, I mean, they're well compensated. And if they feel that they can improve their livelihood and improve their ability for promotion and they move on to other fire districts, that's fine. I understand it. I did that myself. I worked for the city of Beaverton for 2.5 years, and then I left and went to work for what's now Fault Valley Fire and Rescue. It was a great, great opportunity and a decision. So I think each individual employee has to make their decisions on what's best for them and their families. And to just kind of lump everybody together, I don't think that's a fair assumption. So, you know, you're going to have some people that they're going to move on. Good for them. And you're going to have other people that stay around, and that's good for them too. So,
okay, Mark, I want to ask you a couple follow-up questions, if I may. Maybe I wasn't clear. First off, I at some point I'd like you to actually tell me how each employee costs $200,000 in benefits, because even with PERS, I find that hard to believe. I'd like to see the math, but specifically the culture I'm discussing is just the one of low morale. You also have 7 women who have claimed to have been forced out of Columbia River Fire and Rescue. I don't know if they were administrative staff or some of them were actual firefighters, but my point is that there clearly is some sort of issue going on. So I just want to, are you saying that you feel like the culture is fine and that just maybe some people aren't happy? Is that what you're saying? I need you to be more specific, if you could.
Okay. You said there was like 7 or 8 women that were forced out?
That they're claiming, the lawsuit claims that 7 women were forced out of their jobs, and there is thus a lawsuit against Columbia River Fire and Rescue. And that lawsuit claims that there were 7 women, but only three have come forward.
Okay. Two of the women left because of our enforcement of COVID vaccine. And they didn't want to get the vaccine. And the policy was you have the vaccine or you're going to be discharged. And so they left. They resigned. So that's two of them. Mm-hmm. The other one's position was eliminated because of budget. And the other ones, I'm not that sure of. And as far as the culture, again, like I said, you know, it depends. Some people love it. Other people don't. You know, when I was working as a firefighter, we had changes going on, and you know, a lot of the people didn't like the changes when we had a new fire chief come in. That's just the way things are.
Okay, thank you. And at some point, you don't have to give them to me right now, but sometime during the show, if you could come back with those numbers, that the benefits are $200,000 per firefighter or per employee. Thank you. And finally, Mr. Welby, could you answer the same question?
I don't think it's healthy at all. Everybody that has left the fire district has said it's because of the fire chief and his administrative personnel. So I think that it just baffles me. You know, I mean, that doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of mentorship going on. The people that have been in the fire department, you know, in a leadership role, they're all leaving, and those were the mentors for the, you know, these kids that are coming into the industry and, you know, that are supposed to come out and help my parents, you know, especially the paramedics. They're leaving over this pay thing, and that just baffles me. Like, why would the board, you know, why would they be okay with taking away 8% of their money? That's ridiculous. Especially when the cost of living, you know, the COLA was what, 8.7% for Social Security this year? And we're going to make them take an 8% cut, which I sincerely hope that was not their intention. But after listening to the last board meeting, I think it is. And I don't understand why you would build your district office. You would remodel that thing and spend a whole bunch of money when finally I saw on their website yesterday that today bids are going out for fixing the bathroom that's leaking in the fire department station. Why would you put yourself first? You know, when I started my company, you know, I would rent a house, you know, and if I had to buy something, it was for my company to make my guys, you know, have better, you know, the tools they need, you know, so they were successful. Because at the end of the day, if you make your employees successful, you're successful. So, you know, on the lifted trucks and everything like that, I mean, I can kind of understand some of the stuff, but, you know, like I understand why you have four-wheel drive ambulances, but I don't understand why you would spend that much money on four-wheel drive fire trucks and they don't work. So one of the tanks is brand new and the tank leaks. It doesn't even hold water, so.
Okay, we can come back to that later, but okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. Carol, you're next. Oh.
Okay.
There you go.
Unmuted. Yeah, this is very sort of overwhelming this early in the morning. I know there's so much going on, and I don't really have any personal opinions about it, except that I don't like to see women feel discriminated against. Anyway, what is one thing that you would change if you got on the board, if you started in the first thing you would want to bring to the organization for change? And we'll start with Mark.
The first thing is the fiscal responsibility. You know, we've got the Columbia County District Attorney looking into our budget process and accountability. I think that's the biggest thing, because from what I've heard, I think people are going to be surprised on what comes out of this investigation. And I think the investigation needs to be completed and then reported back to the board, and the board can make appropriate decisions on how to go forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Ryan?
Can you repeat the question?
Yes. What is the one thing that you would bring up right away if you are to get onto the board? What's the first thing in your mind that you want to see happen?
We're trying to call Austin.
The very first thing I would do is I would make this place more transparent, right? I missed the board meeting on Tuesday or Monday or Tuesday because my kid had a baseball game and I'm the coach. So I tried to find that online and you can't find that anywhere. You can't even find April's on the website when I go look. You know, I mean, how are we supposed to get our information? How are we supposed to, you know, as taxpayers know that the board is doing their job? You know, I mean, the board and the fire chief is quick to throw out numbers, you know, like response times to Columbia City and, you know, more often than not when, well, show me the data, show me the backup, you know, Mark saying about, you know, they make $200,000. I'm like, I'm not aware of anybody that makes that much money there besides maybe the fire chief. So if you're going to say something, you need to back it up and it needs to be transparent. That's what I would do.
Thank you. Let's see, who's next? Richard?
First thing I would do is I want to try to restore the public's trust. There's a whole lot of, and transparency, there's a whole lot of stuff going on here that doesn't add up, that doesn't come out right. First thing would be like public records requests. ORS statute 192.324 says that you are required as a public agency to reply in 5 days of notification to a respondent that you received the request and whether you're going to handle it, whether it's been done, what the status is on it. I've had a request out there now for over a week and I haven't seen any reply. I brought it up at the board meeting Tuesday night, still haven't got a reply. And all I'm asking for is security camera footage off of cameras for one of their stations. And I know that they can pull that up easy. I have security cameras here and I can pull it up for somebody in 5 minutes, but they can't seem to produce that, but they can produce a public records request for a board member, supposedly, if it really did happen. Immediately, you know, within a week, they can produce it also for the spotlight paper within a week, but they can't do it. Other things, I asked public records request for the admin remodel RFP. When was that approved? And got nothing. I got garbage back. They denied $2,000 another person paid for a records request and they denied a 2/3 of that. He got a 1/3 of them and then didn't even refund him any money. After they charged him $2,000, there's a huge public trust transparency problem here going on that I want to see corrected. That's one of the first things. We need to get the public's trust back and get the crews, you know, being treated the way they need to. They've gone through COVID the last few years. They've been treated really hard and we need to take care of them that way. That would be my goals. Transparency, public trust, and taking care of the crews.
Thank you. Okay. Is that everybody? I think so. I guess it's Brady.
Okay, well, it looks like Brady, he is back. He's trying to reach Austin, I think.
Yes, I just talked to him. He said that he is at work, but he's going to try and join us shortly. We'll see. Richard, you go by Rick, is that correct?
Yeah, I do.
I sort of want to address what you just were talking about and follow up on that about the public records requests. So, Were you a volunteer or an employee of the fire district?
I was both.
Okay.
I started in 94 as an assistant mechanic and in 96 I was hired to the title of mechanic. And then in 2005 I became the lead mechanic and I ran the shop up until 2019 my departure when I left. I was never fired. I resigned. I was a volunteer starting in 1990. With Rainier Fire District and with the merger of Rainier and St. Helens into Columbia River, I came in with the merger to Columbia River. But I was a volunteer up until 2000, November of 22. So
I'm sure that you are aware of the articles in the paper and as you just touched on the release of public record regarding your leaving selling scrap metal and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to, you know, ask you directly, are those accusations true? Were you selling scrap parts And then, of course, the accusation was that you were collecting those, that money. And it wasn't clear about whether there was accusations that you were taking the money personally, putting it, you know, in sort of a petty cash fund. But then when the chief asked for the petty cash fund, the money was gone. So I wanted to sort of give you a chance to explain your side of that, and clear up some of those questions.
Well, it's a half truth. I did have a cash can there. It was started by the mechanic ahead of me. If somebody came in and used a steam cleaner, yes, you put $2 in the can for the kerosene, you know. So it's kind of reimbursement, but we had it there and we used it for parts. It was never used for personal. I never took from it. And, I did sell scrap, but it wasn't wheels or anything in the district surplus. It was scrap that a fire district or any maintenance, I guess any maintenance shop will have, like old brake rotors, old radiators, parts that we've replaced on vehicles. And it was a city scrap, city St. Helens and ours, and we put it in a bin. And when that bin was full, we hauled it in. I never hauled it in on work time. I never used a department vehicle. I kept records of all of it. I had a logbook and the can and receipts and the logbook were all turned in when I was asked about it. But I was just told we can't have that. Don't do it again. It was not at all like the fictitious letter that Smythe made up.
But it said that there was cash in the can and then the cash disappeared.
No, the cash did not disappear. The cash went to the admin. If you read the whole letter,
okay.
When he picked up the can originally, it had receipts in it and the money in it. And then he says he took the can down to the finance director. She brought it back to me for receipts. He said earlier in his letter the receipts are in the can. He had all that. Can never be back. If I had taken the money, I would have been reprimanded. I'd have written a reprimand on my record on that.
Okay.
I was never reprimanded, ever.
So now you resigned from employment or volunteer or both?
I resigned from employment due to Smythe.
Okay.
He was my boss. I did not agree with him. I did not agree with his ways. He made me hire Jeremy Letter against my judgment as a shop foreman. And I decided I didn't need that stress. And I left there. And I happened to be hired up by one of my customers that I did work for.
Okay. And this just happened, right? This just happened in like April.
No, I left there in May. The first day of May of 2019, I started my new job.
Okay.
So we've got to take a break. We can follow up on this after the break.
All right. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Help the Arbor Day Foundation plant more trees across the nation. Plant a tree today for all the world to share. You can make the air taste fresher, breathe as deeply as you please. You create a world of pleasure just by simply planting trees. Adding shade, creating beauty is just part of what they're worth.
This is Crystal Gale. Plant trees. For more information, go to arborday.org. You'll make a world of difference.
You are not authorized to access this facility.
Having a problem with your desktop, laptop, or tablet top?
Warning. Self-destruct sequence has been initiated. Warp core overload in 7 minutes.
It's never too late to call Brady at Preheim.com, 503-543-4884. Or email Brady on the web at Brady@Preheim.com. Serving Columbia County for over 24 years. Desktops, laptop, tablet top, cell phone top, and Brady makes house calls and business calls. So don't put up with a slow or no computer. Give Brady a call now, 503-543-4884 at Preheim.com.
Brady is the only guy I know with a cardboard cut out of Mr. Spock behind his desk.
Now let's go back to Brittany and Tammy and Carol and Melinda on the Combo Shows. Here we go.
Now welcome back. We're doing a joint show. We're setting the record straight, and we're having the candidates for the Columbia River Fire and Rescue District. And we're going to finish up with any more comments on the questions for you.
No, I don't. I also want to tell you that if you're trying to use the Shoutcast off the Kohai website, it is at maximum. And you can try TuneIn or what's the Mac version that's better, Melinda?
Online Radio Box / Kohai.
So try those two if you're trying to stream and are unable to, although you probably don't hear this if you're trying to do that, but oh well. That's why there's some issues. I do want to ask, sort of change subjects here, and ask a more general question of everybody, and I'll start with Ryan about the Columbia City fire station that the chief has proposed to, I guess not really proposed, you have a question about whether they want one. It was a very hostile group of people in Columbia City, I think mainly for the location of the fire station. But my question are, number one, do you support that? Do you think that we need one in Columbia City? Do you think the location is a good location? And the third part of that is, they're only sending surveys to the residents of Columbia City. Why is this not a district-wide issue, since we will all be paying for the personnel and the station that are in the district? Why is it just a question that you're asking Columbia City?
So I guess the first one is, do I think there's a, I think I would like to see the actual response times, like show me on a, you know, a chart, how many times were they, you know, was it over 8 minutes? Because from St. Helens to Columbia City, I timed the other day in my truck and I hit a stoplight. I was there in less than 6 minutes. So, you know, and I don't try not to speed, but I think that if I had lights and sirens and everything else and there was somebody that needed my help, I would turn the lights on and I'd get there. So I would like to see that. I think we all deserve to see that. The location, I think that if you have to listen to the people in your community, and if they don't want it there, then you need to find something else, you know? You can't say, well, we don't care because it's a good deal. You know, I mean, if people don't want it there, they don't want it there. That's like putting, you know, a homeless camp in your backyard that they make you do. I don't, you know, it should be your, you know, the community's decision as a whole. You can't make everybody happy, but, you have to at least try. In regards to just Columbia City, I think that it should go out to everybody, but I think that before it goes out to everybody, you should really make sure that it's a valid, the question that you're asking of having a fire station in Columbia City is valid and warranted. You know, don't, because somebody that's, you know, out in Global or Rainier, they probably don't see the need, or they probably don't know where the park is, you know. So I think that you need to, we need more information in order to make an educated decision as a community and as taxpayers.
All right. Rick.
What was the question again?
Do you support the Columbia City Fire Station?
Oh, yeah.
Do you support its location? And do you believe that this is just the Columbia City issue, or do you think the whole district should be questioned about it since we'll be paying for it?
Well, I do think the whole district should be involved in it. There's a whole lot of pieces to this puzzle, Brady. Before the station even needs to be built, we need personnel. We can build 100 stations, but if we don't have people to staff them, they're wasted money. That's my opinion. We had manpower at Deer Island Station. When the merger with Rainier occurred, those people were moved to Rainier to spread the staffing out. But if you went back and looked at the actual call records at Deer Island Station, probably close to 80% of the time, the crew wasn't there. They might have got to sleep there some nights, but they were in St. Helens covering calls where the hub of activity is. That station was empty a lot of the time because they had to move up. We call them move-ups. They had to move up all the time to cover St. Helens when St. Helens was all tapped out on calls. And the same thing's going to happen to Columbia City if we can't improve our staffing. Right now, ask the fire district for staffing of how many times Rainier Medic has to move up to St. Helens. They move up almost daily to cover St. Helens. So if we tell the public in Columbia City that we're going to staff a station 24/7 there, it's a line of bull. because they're not going to be there most of the time. They're going to be running calls out of the other station covering the medic calls throughout the county or the district. I mean, we have mutual aid agreements too, Scappoose and Clatskanie. And sometimes their medics are coming to Clatskanie or Scappoose to help and vice versa. The night of the fire at the nursing home, the care center, Scappoose came to St. Helens to cover a medical call, and Clatskanie went clear to Scappoose to cover their medical call that night. That's the way the departments work together, and it all comes down to staffing. We need more people. The other part of that is I know how grants work and a lot of stuff, and a lot of times the department has to have matching funds to get grants. We did this with the county when they put the EOC out there on the training grounds for the fire district. The county had a grant to build an EOC, Emergency Operations Center, but they didn't have the matching funds to go with it. The grant required a percentage of money from matching funds. Columbia River Fire gave the county title to the least piece of property, the training grounds there by CECOM, to count as matching funds so they could get the grant. So if Medina can get Columbia City to give him a piece of property, he can use that as a matching fund donation to try to get a grant. He still has to apply for grant.
Tell us what an EOC is.
What?
Tell us what an EOC is.
Emergency Operations Center.
Okay. Thank you.
So, and then again, just getting a grant, it's like hitting a lottery. You know, everybody's applying for these grants. It takes a really good grant writer to write a grant to show the need, the actual need for it. Ryan, I have a bunch of those run statistics. We were only out of our 8-minute response time in Columbia City, like 12, I'd have to go look up the paper, but like 12 times last year. Okay.
Out of how many calls?
My point is that should be, everybody should have access to that. And Medina should have brought that to that town hall meeting in Columbia City.
Well, I was sent it by the union because they thought he was going to bring up that he was going to say we had long response times. They sent me the copy of the response times.
So what percentage of calls is that?
I don't have that paper with me right now.
I have it right in front of me. So in 2019, I'm just going to talk about the code 3 medical responses. 165 calls. It was over 8 minutes 10 times. 2020, 143, we were at 143, we were late 7 times. Let's jump up to 2022. We were out of 187 calls in 2022, we were late 12.
Okay. Thank you. And Mark, we'll give you the final word here.
I think a station in Columbia City would be very beneficial for the fire district. The first thing is the fire station located in St. Helens is not in a good location. When it was built and staffed for the city of St. Helens, it was a great location. But now that we've expanded to what is now Columbia River Fire and Rescue, that fire station is not in a good location. It needs to be closer to the highway because that's where the calls come from. I've been advocating for a standard of cover for years, and that standard of cover will show us where the call volume is and where should we place a fire station to reduce our response times. And again, with the Columbia City location, that will reduce our call times to reach the citizens. And that's key. That's what our job is. You can argue about, you know, people don't like fire stations in their neighborhood. They're loud, the sirens, but when it comes down to it, it's what's needed to reduce the response time to meet the needs of the citizens when they've got an emergency. So I'm all for it. And I believe in that the land will be donated and for the fire district, and then the fire district has to fund the building of a station and the staffing of the personnel. Thank you.
Do you think that this is an issue that the entire district should input on, or is it just a Columbia City question?
Yes.
Mark.
You know, I think the entire district needs to weigh in on it, but more specifically Columbia City, because that's going to impact, you know, their insurance rate based on having a fire station that's staffed. in their area. And, you know, the response times throughout the entire fire district.
All right. Thank you. And Rick, I do want to have a quick follow up on you. You talked specifically about staffing. And there was some misunderstood information that was prevented by the fire chief saying, in Columbia City, saying that he actually has three additional firefighter paramedics than when he started. And it wasn't clear with the turnover numbers that you mentioned that I had heard, I think, something like 20-some firemen left and 35 paramedics left. But then he's saying he's up three. So does that mean that he hired 38 people and lost 35 and is three ahead? Or can you explain that?
Brady, I'm not sure the exact staffing level. He says he increased three positions. I do not know if those are three ALS paramedic firefighter positions or just three firefighter EMT basic positions. And that's a big difference on an ambulance of being a paramedic or a basic. And I honestly don't know. There's been at least 26 people that have left. I have a list, but not here with me also of all the people that have left. I'm not sure how fast they've been refilling those positions. I'm not sure. I know from the union, the paramedics are getting burnout because they used to have on each shift, they had a couple paramedics per shift to run so they could kind of trade off calls. You know, you're going to take the medic call and be in charge of the medic this shift and, or this call, run the next one. They kind of trade it off. And now they don't get that to do that. Now they're short enough. They're the one paramedics doing everything on all the calls.
Yeah. But you don't know.
I don't. If
the plus three is a net plus three or he hired three out of 35 replacements.
I believe he's got three new positions at when he came
in. In addition to the replacement.
Yeah. But I don't know where we're at now attrition wise and people leaving if we're still back at that level.
Okay.
I don't know if we're still below that level. Those numbers I do not have.
All right. Does anyone know, Ryan or Mark, do you know those numbers?
I do not.
You don't know? And Mark, do you have any information on that as far as staffing goes?
Yeah, I got a memo and I count 14 people that have, well, you know, they left the organization.
Okay.
You know, that's what I'm looking at right now.
And have those positions all been filled?
I don't know if they've all been filled. We're trying to get through the civil service to get these positions filled. And where we're at with that, I do not know.
Okay.
But,
all right.
I mean, people resigned to go with another fire agency. Some resigned in lieu of termination. One left to rejoin the military. One left to become a plumber. A lot of people retired and some took positions at other organizations. I know two of them left to become fire chief. And when you're division chief, that's kind of what you want to be as the fire chief. And so when the position becomes available, you jump on it just so you can have that on your resume as a fire chief. I'm not sure if we do exit interviews. Some people, you know, they leave to go to a different organization that has better wages, benefits, and the opportunity for promotion. As I said earlier, I did the same thing. So, I mean, that's their decision.
Well, isn't it true that the Columbia River and Fire Rescue is one of the highest paid fire districts in the state? So you'd have to almost leave the state, right, to get a better increase.
Well, I know we compensate our employees very well. And, you know, that's the decision they have to make if they want to go someplace else for better wages, benefits, and promotional opportunities.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead, Tammy.
Thank you, Brady. This is a question for you, Mark, and then we'll go with Rick and then Ryan. There was an issue with Chief Smythe where he rolled his pickup truck or his vehicle going to an emergency, and his wife was in the truck, and she left the scene. Isn't that against the law to have an unauthorized person in the truck? And isn't that a cause for a disciplinary or suspension or termination action again with the board? And could you answer that, Mark?
I remember the incident. I can't remember that his spouse was in the apparatus. It's not uncommon for spouses, significant others, to be as a quote ride along to see what they do. As far as the incident, I think it was brought up, and he was told he was brand new to the position here, and I don't think he understood, you know, gravel roads and stuff. And I think he was told, you know, you need to slow down, be aware of your situation. And I can't remember there was any disciplinary action on that. But as far as people being on a ride along, we do that quite commonly so people can see how we actually operate the fire district.
Well, wouldn't you have a sign off or something on that for the liability? And frankly, the comment about him not being aware of gravel roads, I kind of knew that when I was 15 years old. So I think we'll just move along before I say something that might hurt your feelings. Let's go with Rick. What do you think about that incident, and how would you handle that as a board member?
Well, like Mark said, we do have ride-alongs, but true ride-alongs are supposed to sign a form, the liability form, to come on as a true ride-along. And I know that it's in past practice, spouses have ridden with chiefs. So I know she was there that day. He told me when I arrived on scene, I was one of the first arriving on scene after he wrecked, and that she had been taken home already by somebody, that she was uninjured. I mean, again, it needed to be reviewed by the accident committee. And if necessary, discipline if there was fault found that shouldn't have happened. And, it happened in 2014. It's been a while back. He was new to the district, responding on Memorial Day weekend to a car fire, if I remember right. So, if disciplinary action was accept or applicable there, it should have been done. I don't remember, and I don't know what happened at chief's level with him on that.
Okay, Ryan?
This is obviously news to me. I read it in the paper the other day, it was on Facebook, on Concerned Citizens. But I think that nobody's above the law, and I think that if there was a form to fill out, and I understand, you know, I mean, if it's Memorial Day weekend and, you know, you're at a barbecue or something like that, and there's a phone call as a firefighter, especially, you know, in his position, you know, you gotta go. So, I don't know the background of the story at all. I don't know why she was in the vehicle. Were they just out for a cruise and then he got a phone call and he had to go? That kind of makes sense to me. But then why didn't she stay? You know, I mean, it would seem like for an insurance purposes, you know, you would have to get checked out to make sure, because, I mean, he put a vehicle on its side on a gravel road, and the speed to which you would flip a vehicle on a gravel road, that had to be one heck of a corner. Again, it was just a snippet I saw of him standing with his hand on the bumper when it was on its side. It was kind of interesting. But anyway, if we didn't follow the rules, and it's kind of suspicious. I don't understand. It could be innocent, obviously, but that's why you have to investigate and talk about it and figure out all the steps. You can't be so quick to judge, I guess, for lack of a better word. But if he did do something wrong, then he should be in trouble.
All right. Thank you. Melinda?
Okay. I'd like to start with Mark. Mark, do you feel that Columbia River Fire and Rescue is fully staffed? Mark, are you there?
This time we are.
Okay.
I don't know the exact numbers, but I believe we are. And if we are not, we are currently looking through the Civil Service Commission to get a firefighters list established, if it's not already, and then hire people off that to get to full staffing.
Okay. And can you talk about why there, and I don't know if you can, because I understand there's negotiations underway, but can you explain to the taxpayers why you're asking the firefighters to take it somewhere between an 8% and a 10% pay cut? And is that accurate? That was reported this morning in the spotlight.
You know, I really can't respond to that because I don't know that much information. You know, the contract was signed, and then it comes down to an interpretation, and obviously there's a different interpretation by the board and by the union, and then that needs to be decided by independent arbitration. And then what that arbitrator decides, you know, the board will abide by.
Okay. Thank you. So then I just have an overall question. I just wanted to ask that as a follow-up to the line that Brady was following earlier. But I have a question for all three of you, and that is, do you feel that the district is being is financially sound, and that it is in the best interest of the community and the taxpayers to build the clump, to build that new station and to move the St. Helens station? Is this good? Is this financially sound? Is this something that we just need to do? There's a lot of bond measures coming up on the ballot this time, and on November, I think we're going to see some more for the community as a whole. So, Ryan, I'm going to start with you. Are we in good shape here in this district financially? Is this something the taxpayers should really consider?
I don't know. I'm not involved. I don't have any of the stats. That's one of the main reasons why I decided to do this, is because, you know, they're asking these bonds, right? They're asking for money, but there is no backup to anything. I can't tell you, you know, I've heard rumors that the budget for Columbia County Fire and Rescue is 9.3, but I also heard it was 7.3. So, I mean, try to find that on the website. I don't know. Again, this is not, I mean, like Rick, he's very knowledgeable in all this. And so I think as a board member, he would do a good job bringing all these issues up and answering these questions as that all of us taxpayers have. I think you'd have to look at, that's a lot of information. You'd have to look at, you know, the true response times. I mean, what makes putting a fire station that much farther out to Columbia City, you know, when a lot of the calls are in St. Helens? I mean, you have to show me data and proof before I can make an educated decision on that. And I think every taxpayer is entitled to that because it's our money.
Okay. Quick follow-up question. Do you think that the transparency of the district needs to be improved for your taxpayers? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Okay, Rick, you're next. Same question. Are we in good financial shape? I understand that there is an audit, maybe a forensic audit, being undertaken currently by the district attorney. But in general, do you think that we're solid enough? We're asking, clearly, according to the union, we're asking firefighters to take a pay cut, but yet now we've done a bunch of construction, and they're asking for a new station in Columbia City, and potentially, and it may or may not be warranted, moving the St. Helens fire station. That's millions of dollars we're talking. Are we in good shape? Should we be asking the taxpayers for that kind of money?
Currently, I would say no, we're not in good shape. If you go back to the January board meeting and the videos out there from the meeting where Medina tells the board that they're running into a big shortfall in budget and it's everybody else's fault, and we're going to have over $1 million, $1.5 million budget shortfall at the meeting April, or just this last Tuesday, he said at the meeting that they got a $2 million line of credit to try to carry them till November. You know, at the fire district, any special district, our budget starts July 1st, and we get no tax money till November when you pay your property taxes. So we have to have enough carryover money to support us and pay our bills till November. And we used to use TANs, which were called tax anticipation notes. They were loans from the government to get us there. And Columbia River had gotten off of TANs before I left there in 2019, where they had enough cash carryover to do that. In the time that Medina's there, that's gone, and now he's got in the hole, and he's having to borrow a $2 million line of credit to do it. And he even said at the meeting he doesn't know if that's enough to carry him till November. So, no, we're not fiscally ready. We don't have the money to do this bathroom remodel that he's asking for. His $600,000 he spent for the admin remodel could have bought two ambulances. He approved the district to go look for used vehicles on GSA surplus to replace ambulances, or he could have bought two of them for what he spent to remodel his building. I don't think we're in a fiscally responsible area right now, and that's why I'm running for the board.
Okay. Thank you. Mark, same question.
You know, we can always be better financially. I mean, you take a look at the school board. they're asking for another couple $1 million to build a school, the high school. The sheriff's office is asking for more money to put deputies on the road, which is great. You know, so everybody's hurting in terms of financial situation. And the fire district is no different. To build fire stations, we have to go out and ask for more money. We just can't budget for it yearly. So, we're trying to do the best we can with what we've got. And, as far as, you know, the fire chief being blamed for fiscal irresponsibility, I don't believe that's true. I think he's doing a good job fiscally responsibility. He went to the district attorney to say, hey, look at these books. These don't make sense to me. He inherited something that he had no control of over years ago. And we just need to let this investigation with the Columbia County District Attorney run its course and see where it goes. And I think people are going to be surprised with when the final report comes out. And I think we just need to let the investigation go forward.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you. And yes, I think we are all anticipating seeing that report. And clearly, if there is some sort of malfeasance, once again, the taxpayers, we are going to be holding the bag. We're going to be paying for that. So, it's very concerning. So anyway, on that note, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it'll be Carol's turn. So stay with us. This is a special edition of Odd Friday and Setting the Record Straight. We'll be back in a few minutes. Stay with us.
You don't own me.
Been listening to Odd Friday with Brady and Tammy here on KOHI. On demand at cleancolumbiacounty.info. Email Brady at preheim.com. And tune in again next time for Odd Friday with Brady and Tammy.
More talk, more news, more weather, more sports. 24 hours a day, this is AM 1600 KOHI St. Helens.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
Mom, Dad, Sis?
Here we go again.
Why are you in a suit?
Picture, if you will, a world with the best network imaginable. I'm talking about the Xfinity 10G network.
Go on.
Mom, remember how your reality shows wouldn't load with all of us online? Now you can binge. And Susie, we'll have fast internet in the basement.
Nice.
If you have any questions, here's my card.
This is just your name on a gum wrapper.
Introducing the 10G network only from Xfinity. The future starts now.
Now through June 21st, new customers can get 75 megabits per second internet on the next generation Xfinity 10G network for just $19.99 a month for 12 months with a 1-year contract. Go to Xfinity.com/10G, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today. Requires paperless billing and auto pay with stored bank account. Restrictions apply. Equipment, taxes, and fees extra. After promo, regular rates apply to internet service. Actual speeds vary and not guaranteed.
St. Helens.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little.
It's time now for Setting the Record Straight on KOHI with Melinda Bernard. You can call the show now at 503-397-1600 or toll free at 877-397-1632. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KOHI, staff, management, or sponsors. Now, here's Melinda.
Good morning, everyone. If you're just joining us, Carol and I are in the middle of a 2-hour special with Odd Friday with Brady and Tammy. Thank you both for joining us again on these campaign shows that we've been having for the last few weeks. And today we are talking to 3 of the 7 candidates for Columbia River Fire and Rescue. And joining us today are Mark Kreitzer. Mark is a current board member. And we also have Ryan Welby and Rick Fletcher, and they are running for the other two positions.
And
four of the other folks, three could not join us today. Austin is working. He's a current firefighter. And Hans Fieg, I hope I'm saying his name right, he was also working, and Kimberly was working, and then we never heard back from Jeff Flapp. So to continue our conversation this morning, Carol, I believe you are up first with a question for our candidates.
Yes, thank you. As I said during the break, I'm kind of confused because there's so much going on here, but I'm concerned that there's a vote of no confidence for the chief, and yet it continues on, and the board says no. And when Scappoose police chief had a vote of no confidence, he was gone in 15 seconds. So I don't understand why we're having what's going on is sort of being handled by Facebook and the spotlight. And I've served on lots of boards, and we just would not let our stuff be out there like that. And I wondered how you feel about it. I mean, I feel like you're asking people to risk their lives, and yet so many of the important organizational elements are in flux. So I would just like your personal opinion about it, and what would you do? How would you change it? So we'll start with, and I just turned the page, we'll start with Rick.
Well, Carol, I know that the board members there, and this is in their, I'm speaking positive to the board, they are privy to information that we do not know. So I don't know what they know. I don't know what they know about this. I know from what I see from the outside. I know from what I see with public records requests and attending the meetings. I've been attending board meetings for 30 years, Columbia River Fire, when it was Rainier, St. Helens. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't add up to me, but I also am not entitled to some of the information they have. So they might have some smoke and gun information. I don't know that. So that would be the first thing I'm going to want to find out if I get on, or when I get on, is okay, what have you guys been hiding from the public? What do we need to know as board members that's privy to information? And then go from there to, like I say, follow through with it, investigate it, and make appropriate actions within budget and legal to fix it.
Thank you. Okay, Mark?
The board is privileged some information. That's a given. We've been advised by the Columbia County District Attorney and our own personal attorney for the fire district not to comment on these issues. We need to let the investigation go forward, be completed, and then get that information reported to the board, and the board will make appropriate decisions. If it means we terminate the fire chief, we terminate the fire chief. But to just unilaterally go and say, we're going to put you on paid administrative leave, I think is a little knee-jerk. The union wants the fire chief, the union wants him fired, because they don't like him. That's fine. But I think we just need to let all these investigations go forward, come to fruition, and then the board will make appropriate action as determined by the investigation. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. We have Ryan.
So I also agree that the board, they have to be privy to certain information that the public's not aware of. So I would love, when I get elected, I would love to see exactly what that entails. I think that would be a real shocker. But I don't know of any workplace, to my knowledge, with that amount of allegations. I mean, I chose to run just based on hearing from what the firefighters are saying about, you know, the mismanagement of funds and their opinion. And I would have to agree. And the fiscal spending of the board and the fire chief in general, you know, like I'll go back to the district office for $600,000 when you have bathrooms leaking and everything else that's going on. You need to put I think that the priority is in the wrong spot. I think they're putting the cart before the horse. The same as, you know, with building a Columbia City fire station. We need to figure out where we're at with our budget. And before you start asking for more money, and I think that it's just a lot of information, right? I mean, you have sexual harassment, you have abuse, you have, like verbal abuse and that kind of stuff from your superiors. I don't think that the morale is there with the guys. I don't think that it's not healthy. And they're not giving us any information as taxpayers, you know? I mean, we need that transparency. We need to know what's going on. So, and then if they can't tell us as taxpayers and the public why they're not getting rid of them, then they need to hurry up, you know, put pressure on the DA saying, hey, listen, you know, people are getting frustrated and, you know, we need to have, it can't be a year from now when we find all this out. You know, it needs to go faster. And I understand it's the government, and that's frustrating in itself, but that's where I stand.
Thank you. I think we're up to Brady next.
All right. I wanted to do a quick follow-up with Mark. Rick said that the fire department had to take out a loan to cover your – can you verify if that's true? Because I'm sure that would be something the board would have to approve.
Board approved a line of credit. I don't know the exact, I don't know if it's Bank of the West, but we approved a line of credit so the district can continue and have the ability to ascertain funds.
And is that a normal budgeting process or is this unique for this year?
You know, as mentioned, we had cans in the past and we went off the cans. And then we have the situation with this budget, which we're investigating, and we had to have a line of credit to make sure that we could pay our employees. And so that's where we're at with the line of credit.
All right. And then you also mentioned that there would be a levy needed for the Columbia City Station. I just wanted to ask you if you were aware of that question being asked specifically to the chief, and he specifically said that no, there would be no levy, and he needed no additional money to build that station.
I can't speak for the fire chief, but in my mind, we would need a levy to build a fire station.
Well, that's what we all thought, but I'm telling you, he specifically denied it and said that was not going to happen.
Well, I can't speak for the fire chief, but I don't know. He may have been talking about the property, but yeah,
no, we need building.
Some sort of funding to build a fire station.
Yeah, no, it was the building because I had asked him several questions about even the cost of the building, and frankly, I was very disappointed in his response in that he had no idea, and I'm like, this is not rocket science, you know, building a building. These are, you know, people build fire stations in this country all the time. You can have some idea of what a fire station costs. And he wouldn't answer the question, but yet said he could fund it. So I was a little unhappy about that. I do want to also follow up on another sort of thing that's been floating around and kind of nail this down. You talked specifically about the, background, you know, investigation that's happening in the finances with the DA. And the DA and said that we can't talk about it, but has the chief not violated your own personnel policy by even stating that? I mean, typically when you're having an investigation, the board's comment is exactly no comment. They don't even make an announcement. There's an investigation. And does that not violate board policy, the fact that you're even saying that you're investigating current staff?
Well, my personal opinion is the chief is doing his job. When he sees something that doesn't look right and it brings it up to a level where he feels the Columbia County District Attorney needs to look at it. That's his job. He reflected that at board meetings, at what's going on. So I don't think he violated board policy by going to the district attorney. He felt that it brought it to a level that was needed to have better investigation, more thorough investigation that the district attorney could do. And then he passed that on to the board, and I'm okay with that.
Okay. So the question really is about the policy about talking about a personnel issue in public. Do you do that? I mean, do you not have a policy about speaking about personnel issues in public?
Can you be more specific? Because,
well, I mean, just even announcing that there's an investigation. Typically, you know, you would cover those kind of things in an executive session, and you would not make a public comment, especially about employees that are maybe current employees. That those are just not questions that you ask and talk about in public.
Well, that's two separate questions. The fire chief informs the board in executive session on the potential investigation. And then as far as personnel issues, it depends on what it is. I mean, if disciplinary, it can be done in executive session if the employee wants it done in executive session. So it really varies based on the situation with the employee and the board.
Okay, so does the board deal with personnel issues? Is not the only employee you deal with the fire chief?
The board only employee is the fire chief. But when it comes to evaluations, if the employee wants to do the evaluation in a public session, that's their prerogative.
And they do that then in front of the board.
I'm sorry?
They do that then in front of the board.
They can. But, again, it's up to the employee if they feel that they want to go to the board through the chain of command, they can do that. But it's basically their supervisor that does the employee evaluation.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Rick. I sort of wanted to follow up with you, same sort of question, specifically about your personnel records being released. Do you think that that was legal, or was that information sort of obtained, I guess I won't use the word legal, but maybe inappropriately by the board and released? Because typically those things shouldn't be released, as, you know, typically personnel records are confidential.
Yeah, those actually are not personnel records. I've never seen them before, and like I said, they're fake. They're made up. And I don't believe they're out of even on a file. It's more like memorandum notes that Chief Smythe wrote to himself, like a meeting minutes. If you read them, I have copies of all of them. And they're my legal, who looked at them, said, "Who wrote these?" I said, "Well, I don't know. There's nobody's signature at the bottom." But if you read the verbiage, it refers to as I and then Smythe in parentheses, like Smythe wrote them. But I don't know for sure if Smythe wrote them or Dina wrote them. I don't know who wrote them. Never seen them before. And there's a whole bunch of things that are wrong with them. And I bet you I'm putting a public records request in for the electronic copies of them, which I'm sure I won't get. But because the electronic copy would be dated by who did it and where. But I think they were just more of general memorandums. Supposedly she asked for two records requests and paid for it with her own credit card, according to the Spotlight, which the Spotlight got that awful fast for public records requests when they can't get me video off of a video in a week. So I think it's all baloney. I think that's just this administration's so scared right now. They're grasping at straws to try to keep new members out of the board.
So it's also reported that you had threatened to fire Smythe directly if you were a board member. Did you in fact do that?
No, sir.
Okay.
No, he makes me sound like I'm a tyrant that I ran around there wringing my hands, he says, and pacing the floor. I never did that. That's not me. Anybody that knows me is not me. I don't do that. If I get mad, I go to work harder. So.
And do you think that it was appropriate for the chief to talk about an investigation to the public?
I think it's a deflection. I think it's more of a, let's try to defer some attention somewhere else. Let's try to make it, like I said, Brady, listening to his speech in January of this year at the board meeting about the budget, and he went on for an hour and 15 minutes or something close to that about how bad the budget was, the state of the union, he called it. But it was all everybody else's fault. As a fire chief, he's ultimately responsible for the budget. And not once did that he say that there was a mistake that he made. It was everybody else's fault. And that seems to be his motive.
And can you just follow up? Do you know if there's a policy about talking about personnel issues from the board? Do you know that if the board?
No, I do not. No, I do not know that. So, but like you say, most personnel issues are not allowed to be released unless the employee allows it. So, and if these have been reprimands that were actually my file, I should have had a chance to read them and sign them that I've read them and agreed, and also have a place to put an addendum to them, my side of it. And these are all just, like I say, fictitiously made up. Some of them are real incidents, like the cash can, but it's not the way it went down. He's changed things around in it to try to make me look bad.
Okay. Thank you. Ryan, I'm going to give you sort of a chance to cover that. Do you think that it's appropriate for the board to be talking and the fire chief to be talking about an investigation that's ongoing, even as to the extent that they already have?
I don't understand what he's doing. Besides the DA investigation.
Oh, sorry. Not you, Rick. Ryan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ryan.
I think that it's a smoke and mirrors kind of, in a way. I feel like, I mean, to be frank, it's a sinking ship, and he's trying to get a lifeboat. I mean, honestly, it's overwhelming. I got asked the question, why are you doing this when all this is happening? And I'm like, I don't know. Again, once I get elected and I get in there and you can actually look at it, you know, and get all the pieces of the puzzle together so that, you know, then you can make an educated decision and then advise properly. I mean, I'm hearing from current board members and I'm like, you know, I'm a numbers person, so you can't tell me, you know, I understand that there's some things you can't talk about, but you should know your job better. I mean, honestly, they should all know their job better. Those factual numbers, and shame on all of them. So I'm sure they're good people, but I just think that it's gotten out of hand and it's got to get reeled in. So,
your question? Yeah, it does. I sort of want to follow up to a little bit about personnel issues. Are you aware that the fire chief was on suspension in an investigation when he was hired? And do you think that that was a good move to hire someone that was basically on suspension with similar accusations to what the union has made against him?
Oh, my gosh. No, I don't. I would ask the board directly, you know, did you fully vet the candidates? Who were the other candidates? Why did you know about this? You know, when did you know find out about this? The fact that they are similar allegations and you moved your family from, and I don't want to be personal, I'm not trying to attack or anything like that, but, you know, you relocate your family from Florida to Oregon, and then hearing about allegations that are similar there, that's kind of alarming. So, I mean, who are the other candidates that we were looking at and what was the decision process? How did we come to the conclusion that Medina was the best choice? I mean, and I think we should all know that.
Rick, I want to let you respond to that same thing.
Brady, I think your time's up. It's Tammy's turn.
Yeah, I just want to follow up and let Mark and Rick answer that same question.
What was I started on?
about Medina being on suspension.
Oh, on that one? From what I understood, actually, that he resigned from Tequesta Fire by the public records request when he was advised that there was an investigation on going to be involving him, that he resigned and left. And then I believe he went to work for a private company for a few years before he came here, is what I know. So I can't really say that he was on a leave of a investigation at the time when he hired him here, but I do question our board did not want to hire local out of a pool of candidates from Oregon. They wanted to go nationwide. They went to an outside agency because SDAO will help do in-state stuff. They went to a national firm, a firm that brought in candidates from outside. I have no idea if they just took the word of this outside firm that these are good guys, if they did a background check on them, if they actually, you know, checked with Tequesta to see what his record was there or North Hollywood. I have no idea what they did there and why they hired, you know, out of the other camps. I agree. What were the other camps maybe better?
So all right. I don't know. Thank you. And Mark, I'll give you the last word on responding about whether you knew there was an investigation and if that was a factor in hiring him.
I don't remember if you were made aware of an investigation. We went nationwide just so we'd give you a good pool of candidates. We had internal candidates that applied for it. And when we did the interview process and looking at the candidates, we felt that Chief Benita was the best fit to give us a new set of eyes to look into things. And that's the decision that was made by the board.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Are you done, Brady? Okay, this is for all of you, and it's good, kind of a two-part question. One, are you aware that having a too small location for meetings is a violation of public law? I attended that one fire board meeting, and there was so many people that there was no chairs. People were standing up, and there was a limit to 10 people that could speak at the meeting laws or at the meeting for their grievance. And since the board knew that that was a hot topic, I think they should have had a bigger venue. And also, with the allegations that's been made against Smythe about him talking about his genitalia to the office ladies and then going into Medina's office and they're laughing and discussing that, I find that so repulsive. And you had one board member on this allegation in this document that said, oh, well, it's not sexual harassment if it don't last very long. I would like each of you to give me your opinion on that. And I guess we'll start with you, Mark, since you're a sitting board member.
Okay, I'm sorry. Could you give me one question at a time? I know you have like three questions, but just give me one question at a time and I'll respond to it.
Okay, since you're the sitting board member and the allegations made by your fellow board member, Mr. Hudson, that said, sexual harassment is okay as long as it don't last very long. And we're talking about some incident with Chief Smythe, among many, where he talked about his genitalia in front of the ladies in the office and then went into Medina's office and they laughed and talked about it. As a board member, don't you find that repulsive? And did you say anything to Mr. Hudson about that remark?
And maybe you can think about that because we're going to take our quick break and then we'll be right back in with your answer.
Attention veterans, as a veteran, there are certain benefits available to you. There are even benefits that extend to your loved ones. What will your family do when you pass? Will they know what to do? Who to call? Thankfully, there's a program that gets you the information you need and answers those questions for those you love. It's called the Veterans Memorial Program and was created by Columbia Funeral Home here in St. Helens. The number to call, 503-397-1154. So call Columbia Funeral Home today to receive your complimentary Veterans Final Wishes Organizer and free consultation to learn about your benefits. 503-397-1154. Need towing? Call Grumpy's Towing, 24-hour emergency service, providing jump starts, winching and recovery for autos, trucks, to boats. And Grumpy's Towing is equipped to service large trucks, to semi-trucks. Grumpy's Towing is here to give you prompt service, and they work with most insurance companies. When you need help, remember, Grumpy's Towing, that's the name for 24-hour service. Call 503-543-5533. Grumpy's Towing, 503-543-5533.
Hudson's Portable Toilet Service. They go where you go. From construction sites, outdoor events, any events where you need extra facilities, it's Hudson's Portable Toilet Service. Clean, prompt, safe, and reliable. Call Hudson's Portable Toilet Service because remember, they go where you go. Hudson's Portable Toilet Service, 503-397-1534. At Hudson's Portable Toilet Service, they go where you go. Nothing is more important to your overall health than water. Did you know that less than 1% of the world's water is safe for human consumption? The water that flows through your faucets and pipes for daily use needs to be clean and pure. And the quality of your water and equipment you use to ensure that quality is simply too important to leave up to chance. You need McMullen Water Systems for all your water needs, from pumps to filters. So call the name you can trust, McMullen Water Systems, 503-397-1744.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little.
It's Setting the Record Straight on KOHI with Melinda Bernard. Call the show now at 503-397-1600.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little. So why don't you just meet me in the middle?
Allegations, I understand that, but until we do the investigation to discover exactly what happened, I can't make a comment.
Okay, Rick?
I think they're very serious allegations myself, and I think if those allegations had come forward against a union member or anybody else besides the chief, that person would have been put on leave while that was investigated. I know it was a similar situation a while back with the division chief that was done that way, and then he resigned before the investigation was completed. I think the chief's getting special privilege by this not being investigated that way. And I think it's totally wrong for Gary Hudson to have said what he did. 30 years ago, that wasn't approved. We have to go through sexual harassment training every year. We have renewals or refreshers on it every year. And you just can't say something that offends people. I mean, and it could be anything that I don't take offense to, but you do. And I have to change my ways to not do that. You know, I have to be talked about it, say you can't do this, you know, and something put in your file saying, okay, I talked to him today about this. So if it happens again, we have record. There's policies and procedures to cover that. And I really don't think they were followed. That's my input.
Hey, Ryan, you have a comment?
Yes, I do. I think that, can you repeat the question?
About the sexual harassment comments alleged by Gary Hudson, that sexual harassment isn't sexual harassment unless it lasts very long. And it was kind of pertaining to Chief Smythe talking about his genitalia in front of the office ladies and laughing, and then going into Chief Medina's office and talking about it again, and they were laughing in there and making comments. How would you handle that?
So this is basically, we're pulling up the lawsuit, right? This is the comments were brought up in the lawsuit.
Yes, I read them in the lawsuit, yes.
Okay. So, there's so many, we don't have enough time to talk about the actual lawsuit. I don't know if this is important for it. But, I think that in any business, it doesn't matter if it's a McDonald's or if it is, you know, the Senate, I guess, government entity, but you know what I mean, Google. If there's sexual harassment allegations out there, then something happens. We've seen it in the news, and I would also agree that Hudson shouldn't have made that comment if he did. I think this is yet one of the many other reasons why we need new board members and maybe younger, more... business owner, right? I'm in the community. I volunteer, you know, I donate, I do the boosters thing. I, you know, go to the 4-H auctions and I try to help the community. And I'm just taken aback by the whole situation. I can't believe that we allowed this. I don't understand why something's not happening to address these allegations. I think that in any other business entity, he would have been put on leave, right?
I don't know of any other situation where they weren't. So, and I find it appalling, to be honest with you.
Okay, thank you. Melinda?
Yes, I'd like to ask Rick and Ryan each. You gentlemen, I've seen signs for the two of you and for Austin Zimbrick, who Austin is on shift today and couldn't be with us. And the three of you, are you the three of you running as the slate? And if so, why is that? It sounds like I've seen on Facebook that you are, the three of you are being supported by the union. Oftentimes in the community, when people run on a slate, it can backfire, but this time it seems that the union backing, that could be different. So Rick, will you tell me, are the three of you running together? And if so, why?
Well, we all are kind of running together, and yeah, we are backed by the union. We're all stepping forward to kind of straighten up what we see going on. You know, it's just, I can't stand back. I go to the meetings. Like I said, I go to the board meetings all the time. I attend them, and I just can't believe some of the stuff that's happening. So I was planning on running anyway. In fact, I filed my candidacy the day that it opened to file them. I went down and filed. So that I was right there. I want to make sure I'm going to get out there and do this. And then the union came up and said, hey, we're glad you're doing this. Can we help you? Can we support you? You know, help you with the signs or, yeah, sure. I have a lot of friends there. I worked with those guys for 25 years. A lot of the guys are still there that I worked with and I trust them. I know they're good guys. So I appreciate their backing. So.
Okay. Thank you. Ryan?
Same thing. I don't personally know Austin or Rick, but through this, the union backing, as a way to get our names out there, we've conversed via text and met in person, obviously, when we did the roadside rally, and we share similar views. So I think inadvertently this process, and I think it's healthy. I think that you should have people that, you know, if we do get elected and we all three share the same views, we're going to give a good representation of what our county truly wants.
Okay. And Mark, I have a different question for you. Can you explain why the new Columbia River Fire and Rescue trucks are no longer all red, they're black and red? Why was that decision made, and is that more costly or was it less expensive than your normal fire apparatus?
So are you talking about fire engines or our medic units?
The medic units.
What we've done in the past is we bought used medic units, save costs. And so what we buy is what we get. And I don't think we want to spend a lot of money to make them all uniformed. We put the name on the side and we go forward with the medic units.
So are you saying that the black and white ones were purchased because they were less expensive?
Correct. They were used vehicles, and we needed to upgrade our ability to respond to medical incidents, and we got what we could.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Just a really quick, Rick, do you have a follow-up? You're shaking.
They bought a brand new medic 2019 when I left, and they bought two other brand new medics right after that from Broad Northwest to Dodges because they wanted to switch all over to Dodges because Smythe thought Dodges best. They did buy some used ones to replace ones that got wrecked and to buffer up the fleet some, but they bought new ones. They had a replacement schedule for like every other year to buy a new medic.
Okay.
By medic, an ambulance, right?
Yeah, an ambulance, a medic.
Okay. Mark, do you have a follow-up on that?
No, I agree with Rick. Yeah, we purchased new ones, and we also purchased used ones to augment our fleet.
Okay. So basically the black and red is not, it's not something that the district is going for. It just happened to be that's what was on sale.
You know, the board doesn't vote on colors of fire apparatus. That's okay. The fire job. I mean, if we wanted to have pink fire apparatus, you know, the board could vote on it, but that's not our position. Our job is to let the fire chief do his job.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Carol?
Okay. On a slightly different topic, it's not like nothing else is going on in Columbia County. We have the now big dissension over the 9/11 board and what and their decision to update our system. I live in the hills. I know life without police response or cell phones. But I wondered how you all felt about this war that kind of is going on between our 911 board and wanting to stay as part of Motorola, Washington County, and not doing the, what we used to say would be the normal way that we would make a decision about changing things. And I've heard from people who work for fire departments that, you know, things get sent to the wrong place because they're not sent from Columbia County, they're sent from Washington County. And I just wondered how each of you, if you had a feeling about it or a sense, or would you like to see a more more elaborate process to choose who's going to take it over, or will we just stay with what we've got? And I'll start with Mark.
I believe the board for Columbia County 911 and their executive director are very knowledgeable on this, and I leave it up to them and their expertise to make the right decision. Sometimes, and I've dialed 911, and I've actually gone over to Clark County because that's where my phone call went into. And then they transfer it over to Columbia County, and then it gets processed. I think if we use resources like Washington County WACA 911, if that's in the best interest and cost effective, that's the way we should go. The calls will still go to Columbia County Fire, Columbia County 911 for disbursement as needed. I think that's going to be fine. I think in terms of the upgrade of the equipment, that's necessary. I mean, we have dead zones in this county where you call 911 and it won't go through. We have emergency apparatus that are in certain areas of this county and they can't talk on the radio to get help or give information. So I think we need to upgrade the system. And however the Columbia County 911 board wishes to do that, I support them because I understand how important communication is within this county to perform public safety. Thank you.
Thank you. Ryan?
I think that if whatever decision the board decided, as long as it increases response time for our community, then I would be okay with that. To touch a little bit on what Mark said, you know, with dead zones, and if, I mean, we could all drive over Canadian's Pass and you go down that one dip and you lose cell phone service. Now I live up in the hills as well, and I drive down into town and there's dead spots up here. I think that's just reality in life. You know, we can try to get more Verizon and cell phone towers out and that kind of stuff, but I mean, that's not really our job. So, I mean, do we go back to, is it satellite phones? I don't know. It's a technology issue, in my opinion.
Thank you. Rick?
Well, I've been around long enough to remember when the fire districts had their own radio systems. Rainier, St. Helens, everybody had their own systems. And the courthouse basement was CECOM. And we actually originally dispatched ourselves, and then CECOM took over dispatching. But they used our radio systems through phone lines. And we couldn't talk from here to St. Helens. We couldn't call from Tlaxcala to St. Helens or Rainier to St. Helens. I mean, it was really local area only. And CECOM came in and put in the new system that we're using currently. It was a great improvement. They promised us that we could talk anywhere in the county with a 5-watt portable. And we soon learned that that wasn't really true. We couldn't. They've made drastic upgrades over the years, the system, to it's better. It's still not perfect. Radio technology changes rapidly, just like your car and everything else. So it's really hard to say. I'm not a radio person, so I I'm putting my faith that they're doing the right job and they're putting it out there. Do I like us being tied with Multnomah County and WACA? The Multnomah's dispatch? Not really. I've seen sometimes that we can be bullied by them organizations. They can say, we're going to do this, and you have to do it anyway because, you know, you're part of ours. So I don't really know all the ins and outs of it because I'm not a radio person. So I have to put faith that they're doing their due diligence and trying to do the right system that's going to last us the longest in the county, be upgradable to future technologies, but also improve our communications. So I put faith in it that they're doing the right thing.
Thank you. Brady?
I wanted to ask a quick question, and then we'll let you do your follow-ups, your closings. I guess I'll start with Ryan about the grievance that was filed by the union regarding wages. It's like, is this a board problem? Is this a union problem? Because it's like, if you people are speaking English, you just signed this agreement. How can you have a grievance so quickly after it was signed?
I think that the board, it's my understanding that the board negotiated the contract and they were, the board president was proud of that accomplishment. And I think that through trying to streamline, to make it easier, it's my understanding that they took it's kind of complicated a little bit, but, obviously that's why it's an arbitration, but, at the end of the day, I think that the intent was for the firefighters signed it, the contract with it being, you know, the normal 10% for a paramedic above the base pay, and they were getting a 2% raise and then a $7,500 cost of living bonus. And I haven't read the contract. I am not privy to that information. I will be. And then we can move forward from there. It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm a union contractor. We get union raises all the time. I don't understand why anybody in this day and age would take an 8% cut. And why would firefighters and the union sign something that said you're going to get an 8% cut? So, and that's for the paramedics. So then the basic firefighters, they didn't get a percentage raise, a bonus, or like a pay increase on an hourly rate for being basic. I think the advanced EMTs get I have it written down. They get a 3%, so they actually lost 1%. And then the paramedics normally get a foreman pay, right? So they get paid 10% above the base firefighter. And so they're the ones that took the 8% cut, the biggest one, and they're the ones that, you know, they should be paid more than the basic firefighter because they have to go through college in order to get that degree.
Thank you. Rick?
There's a large, I would say, misunderstanding, but I think it's more than that. Apparently in the union contract that they did ratify, the verbiage doesn't specify exactly the same. And I haven't seen the contract as the spreadsheet that was on their contract as attachment A. Attachment A had a spreadsheet with all the price. I mean, when you're looking at what am I going to make on this contract, you want to look at a spreadsheet. You want to see numbers. You want to see words. You want to see the numbers. What's it going to affect my pay? And this attachment, they're paying the basics, the EMT basic firefighters off of this attachment correctly per the union contract. They're not paying the union firefighter paramedics properly off that contract. They're giving them an 8% cut. Because they say it's not in the verbiage, but it's in the written attachment that is part of the document, of their document, see attachment A. And from my understanding, the chief's own contract is the same way, that his doesn't have the verbiage saying when he gets paid, it's on attachment A, and attachment A has a spreadsheet. So where's the gray area here? It seems to me like it's right there. They should just pay it, but they can't afford to pay it. So. Okay.
Thank you. Mark will give you the last word.
You know, both parties bargained in good faith for this contract. And the one thing that surprised me was that prior to signing of the contract, there wasn't a discussion on how retro pay would be calculated. I think that would have taken a lot of this out of the realm if they would have talked about it prior to signing the contract. I mean, it's an interpretation.
So are you saying
the
that the disagreement is just about retro pay and not about the current salary?
My understanding is the implementation of retroactive pay back to July 1.
Okay. And was there a spreadsheet that was attached that made it clear?
I haven't seen that. But, again, like I said, you know, they should have discussed this. Both the union and the fire district should have discussed how they were going to determine the retro pay back to July 1st. And that wasn't done, and that's why we're going to arbitration.
And wasn't that part of your job, though, on the board? Because you were representing the fire district?
We relied on the individuals that did the contract negotiation.
Okay.
And we rely on them to do their job, and we
thank
you. We agree with
them. Go ahead, Tammy. Do you want to do the wrap-up?
What do you want to ask a question? Or?
I think we don't have time.
We don't have time for questions. So I guess we might as well start with Mark. You want to do a quick, about 2-minute wrap-up? And then we'll go to Rick and then Ryan.
Yeah, thank you. I just appreciate being having the ability to come in on your show and talk to people and let them know what I think. I can't speak for the board, but I think I want to reiterate, you know, we've got investigation going on for, you know, the serious sexual harassment and hostile work environment, and also with the Columbia County DA that's going on. And I think we need to let those go to fruition. And then let the board hear the reports, and they'll make appropriate decisions based on what they hear. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Tell us how we get in contact with you, Mark. Phone number or website or email if someone has questions.
So I think my email for the fire district is kreuezer@crfr.com.
Okay.
And then I walk my dog in the field at the fairgrounds every morning and afternoon. So if you want to do a field interview, I'm out there.
Okay.
Thank you. Rick?
Again, thank you, Tammy and Brady, for letting me be here and talk. You know, I'm hoping to do
and Melinda and Carol.
And Melinda and Carol.
And Melinda. Make sure you get everybody. I want to make sure, you know, we're all human. We all make mistakes sometimes. And that's just part of our being. We need to, you know, if we do, we need to go back and correct it, do the best to fix that and learn from it. And I hope to do that here as a board member. I hope to come in and we might make some steps, but I want to try to make this a better department again, back like it was, and make us a leading edge department where people actually want to come here to work and they're not avoiding us.
Okay. Do you have a website or?
My email would be Fletch, FLETTCH, 2 T's, @centurylink.net.
Okay, Ryan?
Again, I would also like to say thank you for this opportunity. I think the platform really reaches out to our voting community. And I just want to, my main goal and reason for doing this is to add transparency to which I think needs to happen across the board in our county. I think that fiscal responsibility is a big, huge ordeal, especially with the way the economy is right now. And we need to make more educated decisions. I think that once I get elected and I get in, my first goal is going to be transparency. I think that we should all, my parents always said, if you don't vote, then you can't speak about it, right? You have to make a change. So this is what I'm trying to do.
Okay, and I want to announce this. Vote, vote, vote. Only 16.8% of the ballots have come in. That's a total of 6,896 total votes, and they're only expecting maybe 25 to 30%. So come on, people. Get out there and vote.
You got 4 days left.
4 days.
And, Ryan, did you want to give your website or email address?
My personal email address is Ryan, RyanWelby, Welby @yahoo.com.
Okay, Melinda?
Okay, well, this is going to conclude our joint shows for the campaign season. We don't have one next Friday, right, Brady?
Nope.
Nope.
Well, it was fun, though.
It's been fun. But I'm sure both of us will be having campaign wrap-ups next Friday. So be sure to tune in at 9 a.m. for Odd Friday and 10 a.m. for Setting the Record Straight. And you'll hear all about the elections from our perspective. And I want to reiterate what Tammy said. Please, please, please vote, because there's two levies on the ballot. And maybe St. Helens High School does not affect you or the St. Helens School District. However, the sheriff's levy will. So please, please, please do your due diligence. And I do want to say, one last thing. And I've gotten calls from people. I know that Columbia County doesn't have a lot of money, but it's a huge disservice not to have a voter pamphlet. So if you're listening, Columbia County commissioners, we need to start doing better in these May elections, because people don't have, unless they're listening to COHI, or they maybe pick up the paper every once in a while, there is no place for people to have a whole look at who is running and why they're running. And this is important. We want to keep paying, our tax dollars are going to keep going up. We have a lot of serious issues to tackle. So please, please, please vote. And Carol, I know you have something to say about that.
Yes. No, I think it's critical. And I was taking my ballot over to the box the other day in Scappoose, and I was crossing the street, and there was a gentleman crossing the street at the same time. And he said, "Are we jaywalking our way to cast our ballots?
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little."
You've been listening to Setting the Record Straight with Melinda Bernard on KOHI. Listen again next Friday here on AM 1600. You can email the show, kohi.radio@gmail.com, or email Melinda, strsradio@gmail.com. Oh, take a step.